What's up? This is Movies On Up discussion episode, Jurassic Park, the greatest adventure ever born. I'm Dave, joined with my dinosauric co-host, Ryan.
You're older than me, so I think you are the dinosaur between the two of us.
I'm all about the theme.
I'm all about accuracy.
You're the Triceratops to my Stegosaurus, the Brachiosaurus to my Brontosaurus. Pterodactyl to my Dimetrodon. I don't know. I know about six different dinosaurs.
And that's all of them.
Yeah. But this is the discussion episode for this week where we sat down and watched Jurassic Park, now 20 years old.
That should make you feel old.
Yeah. But again, the greatest adventure ever born. If you're a new Movies On Up listener, that is our tagline contest. If you know what that tagline is from, you can hit us up on Twitter at Movies On Up, Facebook.com/Movies On Up. Or go to moviesonup.com, leave it in a message, or mail us at moviesonup@gmail.com. Or if you need other ways to listen to the show, find us on iTunes or Stitcher. So Ryan, Jurassic Park, you ready to talk about it?
Yes.
You know what we got to do before that? Bonus list!
I did know that, but I want to make sure I didn't step on it.
Top five other movies starring Ariana Richards.
Who is Ariana Richards,
you may
ask?
She's the little blonde girl from Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Top six movies. Prancer.
You jerk.
Yes.
You couldn't have just made it code number five.
No.
You had to make it number six. And why does mine get bumped to number six and not yours?
Because mine made a pyramid. Number five, I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. Number four, Space Invaders. I kind of forgot about this movie.
I kind of did too.
It's actually pretty good. I remember my memories of it.
Well, it's this pretty good for her five movies, or six.
All of these I enjoyed. Timescape, I enjoy in my memory. I enjoy when I saw them. I haven't seen them since.
Have you seen Prancer since?
No.
Okay, that's what
I'm saying. That's why it was six. But number four, Space Invaders. Number three, Timescape. Number two, movie I have seen recently that I still like, Tremors. And number one, I just watched a couple weeks ago, Angus.
That one never gets old.
She's the main girl in that, and she's awesome in it. I love Angus. But that's Ariana Richards, who I thought she stole Jurassic Park. I think she's so good in that movie. After not watching it in 20 years and like just watching it again, that's kind of what stood out to me, was her performance.
That was it.
No, I mean, there's more, but I think as far as the actors go, I think she was the funnest to watch. Just what she did with like her face and her eyes, and the fact that they put her through hell.
Like we have
a blog post on the site now about the MTV Movie Awards, and one of the categories is scared as shit performance. That would be, it's like that was created for her role, kind of, because they put her through so many scenarios that just require her screaming.
It's not that I thought she was bad, because I didn't. I was annoyed by the kids, and I wouldn't say she stood out to me. I don't think that really anybody stood out in that movie. It wasn't a movie about the actors. It was a movie about the damn dinosaurs. That's what I remember from 1993. And going back to it, that to me, that's still what sticks out about this movie. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, what Sam Neill did. There's nothing wrong with what Laura Dern did, Goldblum. I mean, I think everybody was pretty okay. But this movie was not driven by any of the actors. It was driven by computer dinosaurs.
We're going to talk about this later, because later I'm going to do my top five things that I forgot about. I forgot that it wasn't just CGI in this. There were a lot of practical effects, and they look great.
They still, even...
they look amazing.
Yeah, I think if you look at something that's 20 years old, you know, it would be very easy for it to seem dated. And, I mean, the version I watched was not the Blu-ray. Uh-huh. I mean, it was the old school, so nothing was cleaned up. But it looked like, you know, pretty average stuff now, and 20 years later.
And I brought that up in the news episode because the 3D version was just re-released. I don't think they touched anything up. The effects were so good, and they still are, but the CGI is flawless. The CGI looks great. But the practical stuff, I think, is even better. I think when the dinosaurs are really there, it looks so good. Like, I forgot how much was actually there. In my head, I remembered a lot of CGI.
Right.
But I forgot how much practical there was and how good it was.
I would second that. And to me, that's why the actors are kind of secondary. They're interchangeable. Just because of what was done practically and with the special effects that it's hard to watch, you know, what anyone else is doing when, you know, they're in the same shot as a dinosaur.
In the same shot, but there's this another thing. I forgot how much story there was in it. At the heart of it, it's just all these people at a dinosaur park, but there's a lot going on, you know.
And there are lots of shots that don't have dinosaurs. I mean, it's not as dinosaur heavy as maybe I remembered it being, I guess.
And I was okay with that because it builds up to, I mean, it starts off, you have the scene in the start where you just see the eye, yeah. And that's, I feel like that was added later. Like, I feel like that was added because you don't see dinosaurs until...
It seems like a prologue.
A while. And I feel like to release that movie and not have that scene where, yeah, you just get the eye. You only see the eye of a dinosaur, but I think that's enough of a tease to get you through the story because you have, you know, Sam Neill, Laura Dern, he doesn't want kids. You know, they're on top of this big discovery. You have the guy trying to get funding for his park. You have Wayne Knight doing whatever he's doing.
Eating.
Like, yeah, like there's so much subplots getting set up.
Yeah, but I think you're right. That did seem, when you start that strong, I think it does, you know, help with the pacing. And it could have been a very different, a very much a slower paced movie if it didn't start immediately with, you know, what is probably, I mean, when people think of Jurassic Park, I think, you know, the dinosaur you think of first is probably the raptor, isn't it?
I would think so, just because it put the raptor on the maptor.
Right. You notice there's no laughter except for Dave.
But no, I mean, it was, they put something out a few weeks ago or last week about how Jurassic Park 4 is going to introduce some new dinosaurs, which that's what Jurassic Park did. Raptor wasn't very common. T-Rex was far and away the most popular dinosaur. Now, T-Rex and raptors, I think, are your two most popular.
Yeah, probably.
So if they find another species that, you know, they're not making up dinosaurs, but...
Not necessarily.
If they can introduce another one, I'm excited for it. But you talk about pacing. I feel like if that prologue isn't there, it's rushed. Because I feel like without that scene of that eyeball and that action that you're not 100% set up what's going on, I feel like you have to cut all the story. Your introductions to the characters are shortened and you have to get to the dinosaurs.
Yeah, I think it
quicker.
Buys you a lot of time.
Like, it's just that tease. Because you do set up Laura Dern and Sam Neill. You set up Goldblum being Goldblum. From the second he's on the screen, he's Goldblum.
God, like, he's swarthy.
He's so good. He was perfect for it. I mean, he made that character. It was such...
And they spun him off. I mean,
yeah, essentially, because he was...
The Lost World.
Because...
That's Jeff Goldblum.
That might make my list later that...
Uh-oh.
I forgot how little he was in it.
Yeah.
He's really not a key player. Like, he really isn't.
There are a couple people, like, I forgot Samuel L. Jackson was in that movie.
I knew he was in it. His part was a little bigger than I remember. But, poor dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you don't even...
Don't treat Samuel L. Jackson like that.
I guess in 1993... Well,
you could.
Yeah. I mean, he not only dies off, he got, like, the most unceremonious death there is.
There's a prop arm. Oh, it's a black prop arm, so we know who this is.
Yeah, but it is about the effects. Like, you see the dinosaurs, and that first scene with the, what were they, brontosauruses or brachiosaur? I forget the...
Like, I think they're brachiosauruses.
Yeah, you see.
Brachiosauri.
That's what they are in the tree later. But you see just the look on his face and just the look of every... You kind of feel that.
Yeah.
You kind of feel like you're seeing it. And
maybe more so in 93 because we hadn't seen it yet. And it was completely groundbreaking. Now, you know, we see stuff like that. It's kind of ho-hum. But if you can, you know, remember to seeing it. I mean, gosh, I was in, you know, third grade in 93. So that was pretty rad.
But can we just start the whole idea of Jurassic Park? Just seems like a bad idea.
Oh yeah, there's no way any insurance. I don't care how many Goldblums, how many Neils you have. Nobody is going to sign off the insurance on that.
It's just a terrible idea. And I mean, I guess there are jungle safaris, but that's different. That's way different.
Yeah.
But and then it just. Okay, so you have the theme park where there's live dinosaurs. If I go to an island where there are living dinosaurs, I am not stepping foot in a museum. I'm sorry. I don't want to sit down and watch your videos.
Yeah. Although the video was really well done.
And that's actually one of my notes. Yeah. Is that
me too.
Not just was it a good fake video for a movie.
Yeah.
It set up the science very well.
Yeah. It was like a Schoolhouse Rock video.
It was. Yeah. And I mean it.
Without all the music.
And it was weird because how Spielberg did it, where it wasn't just here's the cast watching this video. A large part of it was you're watching this video. So you're getting into the world. Because,
like you're in the park.
Because you do have to suspend a lot of disbelief that there's this park that has live dinosaurs. That's a good way to help you suspend it, is if you make it feel like I'm watching an educational video on why it's possible.
You're right.
So I thought that was very cool and very well done. The video was fun, but it just how it cut between everything was, I thought it was awesome.
I didn't make as many notes as I did during our last discussion episode, but that was one that I did write down was, you know, that it's something that could have been a throwaway scene. It wasn't. It was done well.
And it was crucial, and it didn't lose you. It didn't.
And you could understand it.
And it felt like, okay, if I'm going to a theme park that's 100% driven on science,
they're
going to
have
this.
Even
if I don't want to admit it, they're going to have this, and that gets me into it because it's making science, I hate to say, it makes it kind of fun. Like, it gets you kind of into it. But then the baby raptors, like, just how tiny, like, again, the practical effects looked awesome. Like, everything about the effects of this movie were amazing. And I mean, granted, I'm going on about it. I haven't seen them in 20 years.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it. I maybe 18. I might have saw it again in 95. But just, they look so good. I think we take effects for granted now because they do look so good. So to be able to watch a movie and look at it and think like, holy, that looks really good, says a lot. Especially
when
you consider it's 20 years old. So
you can watch a movie from, you know, 10 years ago. And the effects look like garbage.
Spawn. Take Spawn, for example. That's about, 15 years? Those were groundbreaking, revolutionary effects that look like garbage. They look terrible now. They don't hold up, but everything in Jurassic Park does.
Thank you, George Lucas.
I say I watched it again in 95 because I forgot about this until I'm watching it. The sick Triceratops is cool. Like, it's a cool scene. It sets up. It shows you how. What does that look for?
That I may be making a point about that later.
Okay. But
go ahead.
No, I like that it shows how much they care about the dinosaurs. Like, how much.
Like, it would really be a zoo, you know, and they would want to take care of their animals.
Well, and Laura Dern and Sam Neill, how they could keep going on and looking at all these dinosaurs, but they have that compassion for the one. Like, they, because they legitimately care about the creatures.
And good for her for being a botanist and knowing exactly how to fix a Triceratops, knowing all about their biology.
Yeah, but what made me remember that I'd seen it again was my science teacher, it would have probably been freshman or sophomore year, played this movie in science class. After the sick Triceratops scene, he paused it. Like, lights are off. He paused it, turns the lights on, and says, all right, we're going to hear a word that you're not used to hearing in school. Nobody says it, and we don't even chuckle at it. Okay? Turns the lights back on, hits play, right as Jeff Goldblum says, this is one big pile of shit. And like that was it. Like, he just stopped it just to say, don't chuckle at this line that's supposed to be funny. So I guess I did see it since 93, but
that was one big pile of shit, though.
It was. But then just you look into, then then it starts happening. Like, everything starts happening. And one of the most iconic shots. Are you going back to Triceratops, or you want to hit it now?
No, that'll be in my okay. list later. Okay. 'Cause I have a scientific point I'd like to make about that giant mound of feces.
Yeah, I didn't. Are they shoveling it? I guess we'll get.
Yeah,
to
we'll
it.
Get there. If that's not a tease, I don't know what is. If you can't wait to find out what I'm going to say about a giant mound of poop, hang on to your britches.
But there's the water cup scene in the car, that so iconic. Like, I remembered that single shot, and you think like, oh, if you're thinking back to Jurassic Park, that's probably what you think of. Is
that whole scene. I mean, even the T-Rex eyeball.
And then I see the T-Rex eyeball, and it's like, oh, wait, no, that's the one. Like, it's just iconic shot after iconic shot. And it's that's when it becomes this, it turns from this like fantasy movie into like a legit horror movie.
Yeah.
Like that T-Rex scene is terrifying. Like it's legitimately scary. Like it's got everything that your good horror movies have. I mean, it's got this foe that you can't defeat. It's got the scares, the jumps. It's just, it's so well done and it's not rushed. And I think that's what makes it, that scene goes on for a long time.
Yeah.
And they barely get out. And the lawyer doesn't. Spoiler alert.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, I mean, but then that kind of is almost the end of Goldblum's character.
It's the end of his action in that movie. Yeah. Sure is. He gets, I don't know, he breaks his leg or does something.
Yeah, so he's just like hanging out the rest of the movie.
He's like Kevin Ware for the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the kid from Louisville that broke his leg.
I know.
I'm not explaining it for you. I'm explaining it for us all. You mentioned that, boy, this movie's 20 years old. Can you believe it? When you see things like, hey, look, an interactive CD-ROM.
I have that exact same line.
Yeah, I just quoted it. Like, yes, that means that it's dated. And what kind of system are they messing around with, Nedry's computers? Is it Linux? Or
it was, it's similar.
It's probably even pre-Linux.
Yeah, I think it's pre-Linux. She says it. I forget what it's called. But, the interactive CD-ROM is actually in my notes. And then you got then Sammy Jackson. He has a line that is in my five things I didn't remember, because how do you forget that line? His catchphrase almost in the movie that he says twice.
I feel like I forgot it.
We'll get back to it.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
Because it felt like Stephen King wrote his dialogue for these two scenes. Then we meet Wayne Knight in the work setting, which if I had a nitpick about anything in the movie, he was too overdone. Like Wayne Knight is this.
He was too nerdy, or
he was too much of a mess. Like too much of a.
Yeah.
Like he set up, you have all the science, and then you go to his desk. It's just papers around it. Like it just was filthy. And then they talk to him, and he just has such an attitude. It's like that kind of took me out of it a little bit, because I just can't see somebody being that sloppy and that rude working in this kind of environment.
I don't think he worked there. I think he was kind of a subcontractor. He bid for the job. He underbid, which is why he was getting underpaid, or at least he felt he was underpaid, and that's why he, spoiler alert, tries to steal all the dinosaurs.
I
think that he didn't kind of belong there with everyone, and he didn't want to belong there. If things would have worked out for him, you know, he'd have sold those dinosaurs and probably been a big fat rich guy somewhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, I felt like he was just too cartoony, but I don't know how I skipped over all that. But back to the T-Rex scene, I don't remember what exact line made me think of this, but we talked about G.I. Joe and how the jokes felt so forced in there and they were so poorly written and just shoehorned in wherever. I think it was the opposite in Jurassic Park. I feel like the jokes that were there weren't overdone, and they fit. They were just natural lines that didn't come off like somebody trying to make a joke.
Not like fan service, necessarily.
Yeah, and the jokes were legitimately like well-placed and just enough to where they're not trying too hard, and they just felt natural. They felt placed correctly.
Since we're on the subject of jokes, I wrote a note because I wanted to ask about this. When they're, you know, we talked about the DNA sequence where they've got the cartoon, and they go through and they're watching the scientists do work, and the lawyer says, I think he was trying to say, like, are they animatronic, like the pirates?
It
says
autoerotic.
Yeah, I was like,
that's the one bad joke.
What?
Yeah. No, that's a bad joke, but.
Okay, so that is what he said. That's what I thought, but I was like, what
the
hell? He
says, are they autoerotic? And he says, no, they're not animatronic. They're real.
Oh, okay. At that point, like, I think I was audibly saying to myself, did he just, and I missed the rest of the line.
Yeah, that was a poor joke. But the rest of them, like, Goldblum's felt like he was trying to crack a joke, but that fit the character. Like, he just felt swarmy enough that he would do that. But, like, the girl had some good lines. Like, everybody had, like, lines that were just... Like, I think one of my favorites is when he's talking about... When they're up in the trees, and this is after they escape the T-Rex, and they get up in the tree, and they see all the brachiosauruses, And she's like freaking out. And the kid says, oh, don't worry, they're
Vegasauruses.
Vegasauruses. Yeah. And she just goes, well, I don't like the other kind. That's, I thought it was funny. How it was placed was funny. And just, it didn't, like, in her mind, it didn't feel like she's cracking a joke. Like, she legitimately doesn't like the meat eaters. And it's right. There's a lot of instances like that where the jokes felt like that. They felt like something you would actually say. And that's, when you do try to pigeonhole jokes into movies like this, a lot of it, it's very easy to take you out of it because if you're trying too hard, and I just thought they were so well written into this, with the exception of autoerotic.
Yeah, yeah, leave it to me to find the one exception, but you know, that's what I'm here for. No, wait. You know what? No, there was one thing that I did think was kind of forced, and that was when, you know, they set her up to be some kind of a computer expert, and she self-identifies as a hacker.
Hacker.
It's like, I'm not a nerd, I'm a hacker. Who in God's name
in
would ever say that?
In 1993, yes.
Do you think a 14-year-old girl would say, I'm a hacker?
Yes. In like the mid to late 90s, absolutely. Hacking was like a big thing then. I went to high school with kids who insisted on people knowing they were hackers. Like, I see what you're saying.
Okay, so maybe that is a thing. I just thought, boy, that's...
That I didn't look at because...
Oh, okay, the girl's got skills with a computer, so it won't be nuts when she sits down in front of... The picture-based computer program that any of us could have managed to navigate.
Yeah.
But somehow the computer expert, Mr. L. Jackson, couldn't. I don't.
That's a legit concern. But I just because I remember the 90s when hacker was like a badge of honor and people wanted to be known as hackers, not like as computer nerds. This is like in the infancy of half the time they didn't know what hackers were or what hacking was, but that's what they wanted to be referred to instead of computer nerds or whatever. But that's another kind of weak thing. But we go back to the iconic stuff. Wayne Knight's death. That's probably one of the most memorable death scenes.
When I found out Samuel Jackson was in the movie, I was like, okay, I know he doesn't make it to the end, but I don't remember how he dies. I remember the... Was it Muldoon? I remember him. That line. I can almost quote all of his lines. But yeah, exactly. I remember Wayne Knight getting...
Like, I didn't remember Wayne Knight's storyline. I remembered his death.
Right, exactly.
Because it's cool, and it's set up early. It introduces you to the spitter through dialogue.
Right.
And then you see it. And he's still a little cartoony, but
yeah.
At that point, you're sold that that's the character. It's just a cool scene. A subtle shot is the stuff that he stole just falls and gets buried in mud, and it's just like
a dinosaur.
Yeah, and it's like, that's so trivial. Like, this caused everything. This caused all this chaos. And at the end of the day, it's just a tiny thing that's buried in mud that nobody's going to remember or know about, which I thought that was kind of cool. I'm probably looking too far into that scene, but it was set up to where that
I don't think that's looking too far into it. I mean, that shot was
set up like that. Like, yeah. You specifically see it, and then it never goes back to it.
Sure.
Like, they never know why. They know Wayne Knight disappears. There's no scene of them realizing all the whatever is gone, the DNA is gone.
They never checked the secret room that was labeled very plainly on the door what was in that secret room. I think if I wanted to keep somebody out of a room that had, I don't know, dinosaur DNA or whatever, I wouldn't put like super secret dinosaur DNA room, do not enter.
The Brachiosaurus scene I thought was cool. I'm glad the kids could get some sleep after the whole T-Rex scare.
Yeah.
In this world where there's dinosaurs walking around. But then they find Goldblum, who's pretty much shirtless the rest of the movie. Not really shirtless, but it's open.
Much the way my shirt is open now, except I have the decency to wear a pasty white T-shirt under it. Goldblum, no. He was... Maybe it's kind of weird, but it seemed like Goldblum and Laura Dern were both like, we've got to somehow hot these characters up a little bit.
Yeah, that goes on to my...
Things you forgot about?
No, my next scene. Okay. I'm skipping over a thing I forgot about because it's the second instance Sammy Jackson says his Stephen King-esque tagline. But then, okay, so Laura Dern, we need you to get to we're going to go out with the hunter, who he was underused. He was an awesome character.
Yeah, he was.
Way underused. He's going to do this. You have to run to this thing. Now, all of a sudden, she's some parkour-knowing super action star scientist.
Yeah, she did a little neat little flip,
like,
on that branch.
Jumping over stuff, swinging on stuff, like running through. It just seemed way out of place. But it's like, oh, we are selling her as an action star.
But why? I don't understand why. If I was had to go to what they say, what the Muldoon says is a shack at like the other end of the property, and I thought, oh boy, the raptors are loose. Why wouldn't you take a jeep?
They were in a jeep for a while. I don't remember
why.
Why did they
get out?
I think because the shack was in back.
Well, I'd have got out like at the doorstep of that thing, man.
Yeah, but
seemed dumb.
But that first raptor scene, that's a legitimate scare. Like, yeah. That's a jump scare. That what ruins most jump scares is you expect them. That one, I don't think you do. Like, that one comes out of nowhere. And it's...
I mean, it's set up. It makes sense.
It's set up, like, where it makes sense. But I don't really think you go in knowing that that's going to happen. And it's a legitimate just scare. And, again, it's... As far as a horror movie goes, it has everything that makes a great horror movie. I mean, the in-between stuff kind of makes it not classified as a horror movie, but when it wants to be a horror movie, it's a damn well done horror movie.
Yeah, I think it legitimately scared kids in 93, definitely. Yeah.
But
and
then
probably now.
We touched on Sammy Jackson.
Yeah.
Like, he disappears, he says his catchphrase, he's out, then doesn't show back up again. His severed arm makes an appearance, but never him.
Yeah.
And then back to the hunter. Awesome character. One of the best death scenes. Like, just the line before death.
Clever girl.
I remembered that. Like,
yeah,
I remember that
too.
One line.
Yeah.
Just how brilliant it's set up. And it's just like, it fit the character where it's like, I've been bested.
Yeah.
And like,
I tipped my cat. And I had one of those hats. They're pretty sweet. But he tipped his sweet Outback hat to her.
But yeah, that death. That's another. Like, there's so many scenes that, even though I didn't remember a bunch about the movie, I remember those certain shots and those certain scenes. The kitchen one, I didn't remember a whole bunch about.
I did remember the kitchen.
That scene's awesome.
Yeah.
That scene's pretty good.
To me, like, as scary as the T-Rex scene was, I think it's the scenes with the raptors that were maybe, you know, they were, I think, a bit more scary.
And I think even now, like, I think in 93 it would have been more impactful because we all know about T-Rex.
Sure.
Everybody went into that movie knowing how scary a T-Rex is. The raptors were kind of unknown. I don't think people really knew raptors were that scary of a threat. And now all of a sudden, like, okay, we've survived the T-Rex. How can it get any worse? It gets a lot worse.
Yeah.
And
the T-Rex, you could hear him coming.
Yeah,
you could
see
him coming.
Just carry a bottle of water. But it like shows them as hunters. And it showed them as... I mean, they were stalkers. They were slashers. They were essentially your Freddy, your Jason, your Michael Myers character. Except there were two of them, and they were like, it was just that kitchen scene was awesome. And again, I really think Ariana Richards, like, just watching her, I thought she was so good on screen. I really did. I thought she was everything she did. I was so like I was just into it because she was so good. Like, her facial expressions. Everything she did, I thought was awesome.
I think she was fine. I mean, I think, you know, both the kids played the I'm scared role well enough. But for me, I guess it was just more of, you know, they were believable enough to think, okay, you know, like, I would be terrified if I was put in this same position. And I think they did, you know, well enough.
She was like a scream queen in that movie, essentially. And I thought it felt legitimate. Like, it felt like she was really scared, and I think a lot of that probably had to do with the use of practical effects.
Yeah, I think it would have, like, been much harder to do all CGI.
Yeah, like the scene of the raptor coming through the ceiling, that was probably terrifying for her, so I'd assume those screams are kind of real at the time, and I think a lot of it was, but I like that the raptors were set up as characters. Like, they weren't just... Where the Godzilla remake with Matthew Broderick failed was they just made him an animal.
Mm-hmm.
There was no real...
There's no personality.
There was
to
no
him.
Personality. And the raptors, I keep forgetting the hunter's name, but he has a line early where he's talking about, like, yeah, if you look in their eyes, you see that she's working something out.
Yeah.
Like, you see that, like, the wheels are turning. And there's a close-up on the raptor later, and you kind of see that. Like, when they get out of the kitchen, it zooms in on the raptor, and you kind of see, like, there's something going on behind those eyes. To be able to do that and make it to where, oh, yeah, they're not really just animals. Like, there's something there working, and to convey it, District 9 did that really well, where you're looking at this thing that's not real, but yet it was built up as such a strong character. And I felt like they did that with the raptors.
Yeah, I think they did. They were, you know, you mentioned the Michael Myers, the Freddies. They were absolutely as you know, terrifying as the T-Rex was. You know, it just felt like the T-Rex was just, like Neil says, you know, they do what they do. But the raptors, it felt like there was some kind of malice behind them. You know, like, they weren't just trying to, like, the T-Rex was just like, you're standing in front of my house. Yeah. You know
the
what
raptors
I mean? Like,
just
what
wanted
am I supposed
to
do?
The world burn.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
Like, they seemed, it was more of a game for them.
And yeah.
Like, a showing of dominance. And I thought it was awesome. But then everybody, it's not until everybody reunites that I realize, like, oh, yeah, Goldblum really didn't do anything.
No.
Like, Goldblum had nothing to do this movie. But I remember him from it.
Sure.
And because what he did well. And then, like, they're doing the museum scene. And I actually thought, like, crap, Laura Dern is getting considerably more sexy as this movie goes on. Until they escape and they're on the helicopter and I go, ew, that's Laura Dern. But, like, there's that brief moment where I guess I'm into chicks running from dinosaurs.
You gotta tell you.
I found another characteristic I like in women. If you're being hunted by killer dinosaurs. I don't know, the end, I guess, yeah, it's cool that T-Rex comes back. It felt convenient.
Well, yeah, I guess. But I mean,
but that's nature.
Sure. And how are you? How else are you going to wrap up that story? I mean, maybe they just escape, I guess, which is essentially what they do anyway. But you know, they don't have the ability to really defeat the T-Rex. They didn't really have the ability to defeat the raptors either. So it was just, you know.
No, but then yeah, they get out and. This felt like it was, we've talked about, there's so many iconic scenes in it. I feel like this one was an attempt at one that just kind of fell flat. At the end when the T-Rex is standing there all proud.
And the banner comes down.
And the banner falls. And it's falling, but it's falling where
you can read
it perfectly. Where, what was it, when dinosaurs ruled the world?
Yeah. They still do, look at me!
And it's so, like, it's falling, but it's so perfectly displayed. And it's like, I see what you're doing there, but it's lame.
Yeah, like, I get it.
And
that's
luckily,
ham-handed.
That's not one of the scenes that have went down in history.
Sure.
But yeah, we didn't even get into the science part, the Goldblum's angle about chaos, about the life getting through.
Life finds a way,
yeah,
apparently.
Life finds a way. But overall, and then what we didn't even get to is the score.
Oh, I wasn't going to let you forget it.
I wasn't going to forget it, but it's just, there's no, I can't highlight a part to bring up the score because
I can. Like when they first, you know, get to the park and you hear it is an iconic John Williams score. I mean, you might, you know, forget about it, but as soon as you hear it, it's back 100%.
But I don't feel like it's proper to highlight that once. That is great, but it doesn't let off the gas the whole time. The score through the entire movie is just amazing.
Yeah, it's good, but when they first, it's Welcome to Jurassic Park, you know, you talk about iconic scenes, that's one of them, and it's iconic not only because you're getting to see the park, you're getting to see the dinosaurs, but it's iconic because of the music, and John Williams is one of those guys that just about every score he does, you know, becomes a character in and of itself. And it's something that you absolutely, I mean, you know, you can think of the Star Wars theme, the Jaws theme, you know, the Raiders. It, just go on down the line. And this is another one that, you know, there was probably a good 3 years where any middle school band was playing the theme from Jurassic Park.
And they probably still are.
Yeah.
Like schools with
now,
dinosaur names, I'm sure they are, you know, and I'm sure they never stopped. But I just, overall, I thought it was a great movie. I really, really, really liked it. I thought Spielberg pretty much was batting not quite 1,000,
right,
but pretty high. Like, it was pretty high. I mean, it was, I don't remember liking it that much when I was that. I enjoyed it, but I don't think I watched it properly. As I'm older, I think I appreciated what it was more.
Yeah.
Because it is more than a dinosaur movie. Like, I think there's a lot more there. And if you look at it and you analyze the, okay, here's the science parts, the horror parts, the character parts, I think there's a lot there. And if you're paying attention to it, there's plenty there to really get into. And me now can appreciate all that, where me then, I don't really think could. So I was never... Jurassic, for the past 20 years, I would never say Jurassic Park was one of my favorite movies. I kind of regret that, because if I'd have watched it and taken... If I'd have fully taken it in there and had those memories to go with it, because just watching it now, I loved it. I absolutely loved this movie. And I think I went into it blind enough that, yeah, I remembered some parts, but I feel like I went into it blind enough that I was almost watching it for the first time, and I adored it.
You hit the nail right on the head when you didn't realize what you were watching at the time. There are movies that, you know, for whatever reason, maybe they're ahead of their time, or, you know, you're not old enough to appreciate it yet. Again, the movie came out June of 1993. So I was literally in the third grade. And I saw it because all my friends were seeing it, and I knew there were dinosaurs, and I was still like, dinosaurs are awesome. That was all I cared about. The movie was, it could have been all T-Rex and all Raptor, and I'd have loved it at the time. Now I probably wouldn't have liked it as much if it was just massive dino carnage from beginning to end. And you know, it, 93, could I realize that, you know, Spielberg is one of the best directors of our time? Could I have realized how well made of a movie it was? No, there's no way. But it's a movie I like more now than I did then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this, I really, because Spielberg, his career's gone, he started off so strong. And when you start off that strong and have that much of a run, it's hard to maintain that for 30 years. So it's hard to look at Lincoln the same way you look at, I don't know, E.T., you know, just because of the range there.
Well, I mean, they're different movies, but I
understand that, but watching a
Jurassic Park, Crystal Skull, you know what I mean? They're both kind of adventure-type movies.
Yeah.
One of them is great. The other is
the
Indiana Jones.
Like, I don't appreciate watching Spielberg now as much as I should, because watching Jurassic Park, I really appreciated Spielberg, because like I said, everything about it, there's so many iconic just shots, not just scenes, not just dialogue, but just so many iconic shots that even if you've never seen the movie, you know about them. You know about the water on the car, on the dash. You know about the eyeball through the car. I mean, you know about the spitter, all that. You want to do your list first, or you want to hit mine?
I don't know. Let's do mine, because it almost feels like a buzzkill, so I'd rather not do that last. Dave wanted to do kind of pleasant things that maybe he had forgotten about that made him feel good, I guess, about rewatching this, and I just had to be a jerk, so I decided to make a list of the top five instances where I thought, really? I get it that they're bringing dinosaurs back to life, so there is a certain amount of suspended belief that you have to have, but there were just some things that I thought were pretty ridiculous, and I had to mention them. And I have to admit, I'm not a scientist. I'm more of a used car salesman, but I did kind of get some help from a scientist. A guy by the name of J. Brett Bennington wrote an article in 1996 that found its way to American Paleontologist. So, I mean, there were things that I picked out that I was like, boy, this is kind of messed up. And then when I got backed up by Bennington, I thought, okay, so this is legitimate, and maybe this is the proper way to explain why I was calling BS on some of the stuff. Number five is when Laura Dern, she's essentially a expert on extinct plants, you know, whatever that's called. She's a botanist or whatever. So they get to the island and she says, boy, there's a lot of these plants that are extinct. Well, how the hell did they get there? I mean, they explain how the dinosaurs got there. They found dinosaur DNA. How do they reverse engineer the plants?
The mosquitoes were sucking the blood from the plants.
Right, plant blood.
Solved.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. Like, all right, you got dinosaurs from DNA. I'm okay with that. Kind of. I'm okay with that. But I don't know how you got the plants there. That's just whack. So that's my number five instance. My number four instance is it's about the raptors. They were really cool in the movie, but I think they were very much trumped up. From the fossil records that we have, they really only would have been about 3 feet tall, which would still rip you up. You know, let's not argue about that. But the ones in the movie were like, you know, full 6 feet, hulking, you know, Jason, intimidating.
They were also modified. They were also...
Yes.
So they could have been amped up in that process.
Well,
unintentionally, they added frog DNA. So, I mean, something there could have doubled them in size.
I guess it could have, but they wouldn't have been as intelligent as they were. They wouldn't have been able to figure out how to open a door. I think that was amped up just because they needed to be scarier. And I'm not sure that I'm going to buy the frog DNA. And why did they use frog DNA? I mean, because they had to use a reptile? Is it because they had to figure out a way to do the spontaneous sex change so that this is how the dinosaurs could be laying eggs? Because really, frogs and dinosaurs, their DNAs don't have a lot in common. Bennington actually makes the point that really, to fill in the DNA sequences, they should have used like human blood because it has more in common with dinosaurs than frogs do.
But that angle, the whole... Did we need that in the movie? Did we
need
the scene where he comes across the eggs?
No.
I understand the life makes it, the life gets through.
Life finds a way.
I understand that, but I feel like there's another way without this sex change going on.
I guess maybe if you wanted to set up a sequel, then maybe you have to, maybe that's one way to do it.
Because I haven't read the book. I'm sure that's out of the book, but I'm sure it's touched on a lot more because I know how Crichton writes.
Right.
So I'm sure that was a much bigger part that was just shrunk down for the movie, but it honestly felt out of place. It really did, so.
Yeah. Number three is right in the middle. It is the pile of poop. It was a huge, huge pile of poop that was about as tall as the dinosaur was. So unless the Triceratops got on some kind of a stool or a ladder, a hill.
Well, there were multiple piles, which makes me wonder if they're shoveling all the dinosaur poop into just these piles. But then how does she know which pile to go through to find out what it's been eaten?
And why would you shovel all the dinosaur poop into one pile?
Well, there were multiple piles.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, why would you do that? Why would you condense piles of dinosaur poop?
I don't know.
I just mean from a physics standpoint, like
it was taller than the dinosaur.
Right. It was the rectum is, you know, call it 3 feet off the ground. The pile of feces is 5 feet off the ground. How do you crap up 2 feet? That just doesn't, it's strange. It was just one of those things that, hey, wouldn't it be really funny if dinosaurs are big, if you had a giant turd, a mound of turds, and you know, somebody has to dig through it. So that maybe was a forced joke, I thought. I mean, could the feces pile have been knee-high and been still funny? Yeah, I think it could have, but...
Yeah, and it would have been... There were so many piles of turds.
Dinosaurs poop a lot. If that's one thing we know about dinosaurs, it's that they're like babies. All they do is eat and poop and kill people. Number two, I can suspend quite a bit of disbelief, but please don't ask me to believe that the blood that mosquito sucked out 65 million years ago would still be in liquid form for them to drill into the amber and suck out. No way. There would not have been liquid blood. You could have still had DNA information, you know, from a scraping.
And how'd they find this many mosquitoes? There had to have been a ton, wouldn't there? Because all the species of dinosaurs.
Yes, that's kind of my second is, okay, you have, let's say that mosquito bit a Tyrannosaurus. You can clone a Tyrannosaurus, but how do you get a Triceratops?
Yeah, can you make them from that DNA, or do you have to find a mosquito that bit a Triceratops?
And apparently this particular mine where they found this one mosquito, apparently every kind of dinosaur existed in that same area to be... bitten by these mosquitoes. So yeah, that was garbage too. I have a problem with the mosquitoes. But the thing that I have the biggest problem with is that most of the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park, and I'm using air quotes for Jurassic, were from the Cretaceous period. They weren't from the Jurassic period at all. the T-Rex, the raptor, the Triceratops. No, they were from Cretaceous. I think the Brachiosaurus was from the Jurassic
period. And
that's
the thing, is you're putting all these dinosaurs together that really didn't live at the same time.
No,
yeah.
They didn't. Would Cretaceous Park have been less catchy? Yeah, maybe. But
what about Dinosaur Park?
Yeah, exactly. And that would have been fine. But no, it's Jurassic.
Prehistoria.
Yep, even better. Dinotopia. They could, if they'd have got that, I don't know when the books came out, but maybe they could have done that first. But yeah, I just have a problem with Jurassic Park, but there's essentially
Terra
no
Nova.
Animals. Yeah, that would have been first, right? I don't know. So that's my five buzzkills.
My five things, I touched on most of them. Number one, I forgot how many practical effects there were. I know I already touched on it. I forgot that there were almost more practical effects than the CGI, and that they were just as mind-blowing. Number four, I touched on a lot more story than I remembered. I didn't remember that much character buildup.
Well, like, I mean, when we were young, the takeaway from this movie was the dinosaurs,
yeah,
not the story.
Yeah, and I mean, it was one of those where you cared about the, like, I was bummed when the hunter died, you know, bummed about Sammy Jackson. The body count wasn't really high enough to really get that much emotional impact, but you did care about the characters and you did want them to be well in the end, but they didn't, none of the ones you were made to care about really die. But
no, none of them.
But
do.
I didn't remember that there was that good a character buildup. Number three, I forgot about the whole Sam Neill doesn't want kids storyline that went throughout, that actually led to some good moments that I thought was a cool little subplot.
It was character growth.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's kind of like,
because at the end, he wants those kids.
Yeah.
Because their parents are clearly not on top of it. I mean, Dave, you have kids. Your daughter loves dinosaurs. Would you send her to a park that had raptors and T-Rexes, especially before it even opened?
No.
Right.
No, like,
who does that?
Here's what we didn't even, what kind of lawsuits is he going to face?
They said $20 million.
$20 million for the one guy.
Yeah.
Now you have the lawyer. Now you have Sammy Jackson. Now, Wayne Knight's people probably, although they'd have to find his body. But like, it's all such a happy ending, but you're going to get destroyed, dude. You're not going to live happily ever after.
You think those mosquitoes were bloodsuckers? You wait till the lawyer's friends get a hold of
you.
You
think your kids are going to let you see their kids ever again? You almost got them eaten by dinosaurs.
And the insurance hadn't even signed off on the place yet, so they're directly suing Hammond and
yeah.
his company.
And here's the thing is, yeah, I'm not. If my kids are going to see dinosaurs, I'm going. Why are my kids going with Grandpa to see dinosaurs? I am going. Screw that. I'll take a week off work.
And if I'm those kids, I'm suing for emotional distress or something. And yeah, I'm quitting school. I'm just going to be a professional hacker with all of my I got chased by a dinosaur cash.
Number two, I didn't remember how good of a horror movie it was. Like, not horror all the way from the beginning, but when it got to be a horror movie, it's among, again, it's got everything that makes a great horror movie.
I remember it being a horror movie in that I wanted to see it for months, and my parents wouldn't let me go. And I remember, I've always been a pretty logical kid, and I remember having the argument with them. I held up a VHS copy of The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, which I had seen umpteen amount of times by that point. I said, Jurassic Park is rated PG-13. Is there anything in this movie that's going to be worse than what I've been watching for the past however many years that you've let me watch in your own home? And they really didn't have, you know, they did the parents thing that, like, oh, we're your parents and we say no. So I do remember that whatever they heard about Jurassic Park, about how violent it was or whatever, kept me from seeing it for months.
Yeah, but I mean, it was good. Like, even now, like, it was scary. I mean, the scary parts were, not that I really get scared by movies, but scarier than most horror movies I see. Like, the tension there and the setup and everything, like, felt like really good horror.
Because it relied on the tension and not the blood and the guts.
And my number one thing I didn't remember was that Samuel L. Jackson had a catchphrase, and that twice in this movie, out of nowhere, he would say, "Hold on to your butts."
Yeah, he did say that
twice.
A couple times.
That's
yeah.
such a Stephen King line. Like, Stephen King always has that one character that just says the same thing over and over as a character trait. Luckily, he only did it twice, but it's just, it felt so out of place. But especially coming from Sammy Jackson.
Yeah, that's it too. Because you could see him saying something like that, but the language that he would have used would have been a bit more colorful.
Yeah, but I mean, overall, I'll say it again. I loved that movie. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I've got nothing bad to say about it. It was really, I mean, other than the five bad things that I just got finished saying about it. But, I mean, for what it was, yeah, it was really, really a good movie. I don't think I would show it to a science class for any reason.
Especially if you pause it and tell not to laugh at the pile of poop. It did. I mean, I really liked it. And I noticed... We did say from the get-go that we don't want every episode where we discuss a movie to be a bad movie.
And this one's definitely not.
This one's not. But then I realized I understand why there's so many more bad movie podcasts than good ones. Because coming up with what we're going to talk about for G.I. Joe was a lot easier. Because I had way more complaints. But
yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to make fun of something and to talk about, oh, this is bad and this is bad, which I do from time to time on the show, because, you know, if you're just talking about movies objectively, you know, there are movies that you're not going to like.
I mean, look at our trailers from this past episode.
God, yeah. But I think we try and at least be fair. So when something is good or when something looks good, I don't have a problem, you know, giving credit, whether it's to actors, directors, writers, you know, cinematographers, whatever. This was... You know, obviously Michael Crichton was a very accomplished writer. I said that I think Spielberg is one of the best directors, you know, we've got going. And, you know, you put those two together and I think that you add in the technical achievements of ILM, and Stan Winston did a lot of the practical effects for that. And that's another guy that's, you take, you know, maybe the one of the best novelists that we had going at the time, the best director. You know, the best composer, the best
teen actress.
Sure. Yeah. What are you, like the president of the Ariana Richards fan club or something?
Nah, she hasn't aged that great. But, you know, what's great is I really love this. I really did enjoy this a lot more than I expected to. I have no desire to watch Lost World or Jurassic Park 3.
I was actually trying to like, I remember the plot of Jurassic Park. I don't remember the plot of The Lost World.
I
think there were pterodactyls.
I think that's the third one. Because they're flying away in a helicopter. I haven't seen it, but I know they're flying away in a helicopter at the end and pterodactyls are like flying by. It's like, you're not away from the dinosaurs. But the only reason I watched two was because I was in a really big Vince Vaughn kick
right.
in the late 90s. And he was in The Lost World, so I thought, I'll watch Jurassic Park 2 until Vince Vaughn dies. And then I got stuck watching the whole movie. I don't remember anything about it.
No, I don't either. I was trying to look up the plot.
I think that's the one where they take a dinosaur to San Diego, maybe?
That's the T-Rex gets loose in San Diego. I thought that was the third one with Willie Macy and Samuel comes back. Yeah.
No, I don't remember. But I don't really have any desire to go watch them now.
I might watch the second one.
For as much as I really enjoyed this one, I don't really have any desire. I'm excited about 4, but I don't really care about 2 and 3.
I don't know. I know I've seen 2 and 3 and I didn't like them. So I can be excited about 4 because it hasn't disappointed me yet. Fair enough. Yeah.
But so watch Jurassic Park if you haven't already. If you don't watch Jurassic Park this week, we have a bonus watch this. We're just going to give you a watch this for a movie that takes place in a theme park. Ryan, what you got?
Why don't you give your two first? Because those are like the first two that came to mind other than...
That's why I took them both.
Other than Zombieland. I knew that... I mean, it doesn't take place completely in a theme park, but I was like, well, Dave hates Zombieland. I've already talked about it. I toyed with putting it on there just to piss you off, but I didn't.
I put Adventureland, another Jesse Eisenberg movie, because I thought it was really cute. It was promoted wrong. It was promoted as... a super bad type comedy when it's not. And then this, Ryan usually does the old movies. I went back to, I believe it's 1973, Westworld.
Yeah.
Killer Robot Cowboys.
Robot Cowboys. Yeah. There were medieval killer robots.
Yul Brynner. Yeah. Westworld's just a cool movie.
It's an all right movie. It's one that I probably would have put on here because I thought... And wasn't that based off a Crichton novel, too?
I think that predates Crichton.
I thought it was based off a novel, and maybe it wasn't Crichton, and maybe I am completely wrong, but I just... Having seen that movie, not too...
No, Crichton actually wrote and directed it.
Booyah.
I didn't realize he was around that long.
I got skills, what can I say? The one that I picked, I've been on this kick where, for whatever reason, I'm glowing about 1981 and horror movies from that time. So I picked a movie directed by Tobe Hooper, a pretty well-renowned horror director in his own right. It's called The Funhouse. It's pretty much exactly what you would think it sounds like it is. It's, again, the 80s. Maybe they had some really great horror movies, but they were not necessarily overly clever with what they called them. You know, it was either named after a holiday or the where it takes place. And this does take place in a fun house. A couple couples decide they're going to spend the night in this fun house in an amusement park. And then, you know, standard 1980s, early 80s horror slasher hilarity ensues. Yeah, so 1981's Fun House.
So that was,
check it out.
That was our discussion episode for this week. Next week, our discussion episode is going to be our summer preview. We're playing Box Office Bash, which is similar to Fantasy Film Ball. We'll set up the rules next week. You'll have a couple of weeks to get us your Box Office Bash setups. Earlier this week, we had the news episode. A lot of news, a lot of trailers. That's our typical early week episode. So next week, it's Box Office summer Box Office preview. I don't think we know the week after that yet. I think that's still up in the air. But you can check me out at Dave Becella on Twitter, or I have another show called Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. That's ericanddave.com. Check us out, moviesonup.com, at moviesonup on Twitter, moviesonup at gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup. Hit us up on iTunes or Stitcher. You have anything before we get out of here?
Yeah, there actually was something that I wanted to mention. It's not a plug, necessarily. It's, you know, you talked about, what's her face, the blonde chick?
Ariana Richards.
And, you know, we mentioned five movies that, you know, she's been in. But I think we were a bit remiss to not mention Tim.
The kid?
Yeah. I've got to look up his, I think his name was like Joe or something.
Just type Joe into IMDb.
That's what I'm doing now, yeah. Like Joe Jurassic Park.
Joseph Mazzello.
Yeah, Joseph Mazzello made a bunch of money this past weekend. He's in the number 4, Jurassic Park 3D, and the number 2 movie in the box office.
Oh,
and
he plays Mouse in G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Exactly. We gushed about Ariana Richards, but this dude's actually still acting. He was in Justified.
Social Network.
Yeah, he's been around. So, little Tim, congratulations, man, on being number 2 and number 4 in the box office this week. Yeah, I wanted to mention that. I remember when you were going off about Ariana Richards, I was like, oh, man, I got to mention the fact that Tim is in G.I. Joe with Dwayne Johnson. And then I kind of forgot about it till the very end, and I thought, let me just pump the brakes.
They should have put The Rock in Jurassic Park 2.
Yeah, a sequel to a movie that he wasn't in the first one. Although, I mean, I guess he could be in Jurassic Park 4, right? And that would still work for your formula. Maybe they will. Everything's better with The Rock.
Yeah. You got that out of the way. Anything else?
No, that was it.
All right. So hit us up next week. We'll be back with news early in the week and then our summer preview later in the week. Go check out all our backlog. I think iTunes shows the most recent 50 now, or they're all archived on moviesonup.com if you want to go all the way to the beginning, but you don't. Until next week.
Joe Mazzello, mail me the check.
Keep it up.